I was asked to talk about the cosmic ultrahydrogenic phenazine implications, and what I'm going to do first is just briefly review astrophysical sources of ultrahydrogen neutrinos. Many of those we have already heard, very nice Blackboard talk. But we haven't talked a lot about the active galactic nuclei, which is something I do want to talk about here. Then after that, you can ask the question, why tau neutrinos? You certainly don't expect tau neutrinos to be produced at these sources. So I'm going to talk about the tau neutrinos from mu tau oscillations over these astrophysical distances from the sources.
Can you turn up your volume, or else?
Well, I
don't think
so. No,
no speakers, it's just
for people. I will tune up the volume. Okay, I'm sorry. I came down with sinus infection over the weekend, so I'm really... I have a sinus infection, so I barely made it here. So I've been trying to recover my voice for the talk and staying close in my office. Okay, I will speak loud. So I will talk about the sources of ultra-high-energy neutrinos, but then these are the sources of muon and electron neutrinos, but then over these astrophysical distances, muon neutrinos oscillate into tau neutrinos. And we'll also see that there are other oscillations that take place that have not been noticed before, and I will mention them in a minute. Then, after I discuss these oscillations, and what is the neutrino flux that comes to the Earth, so the source and then the one that comes to the Earth, how they interact, muon and tau neutrinos, and propagate through the Earth, how we can use the Earth to enhance the volume of the detector, but also we'll see the certain problems with these interactions and propagation. I will also mention these are all coupled, high energy muon and tau propagation through the Earth, because once we produce muons from the charge current interactions of the muon neutrinos and tau from the tau neutrino interactions, they still propagate, lose energy. We'll see that there is an interplay between the decay and the interaction of the taus, and that plays a major role depending on the energy and depending on the flux. Finally, I will mention detection of these cosmic ultra-high-energy neutrinos with IceCube and ANITA. These are the two that I will talk about. I will comment on the other ones. So my focus is going to be at high-energy neutrinos, about 10 to the 6 GeV, of relevance to the AMANDA and, of course, IceCube and ANITA, which is 10 to the 8 GeV. And finally, if I have the time, I will talk about something which I find also very interesting, and that is that these ultra-high-energy neutrinos can probe physics beyond the standard model. We have these beams, astrophysical sources of very high-energy neutrinos. We may as well use them to study particle physics, assuming we have enough flux. If we have enough flux, then we can have all kinds of interactions that one expects in the physics beyond the standard model. I just mentioned here my collaborators, Sharda Ayadara, my former student now at Sunnybrook, my long-term collaborator, Halsey Rina, David Sekel, and Irina Mochoyu, who is now at Chicago, my former postdoc, and Jeremy Jones, my current student, and my colleague Shufang Su, which is the last part I'm going to talk about. Okay, so why are neutrinos so wonderful? They're really great because they're neutral, they're stable, they can travel enormous distances. Interaction length of the neutrinos is inverse proportional to the cross-section. Therefore, a TeV neutrino interaction length is 250 kilotons per centimeter squared, or column water of 2.5 million kilometers deep, while photons, as we know, get absorbed by a few hundred grams of material. So neutrinos can probe much larger distances than photons, and therefore they provide a new window to the universe. Just to give you some feeling about the interaction length of the neutrino versus the diameter of the Earth, of course, this is an all-standard interaction, so assuming just the weak interactions of neutrinos. This is the interaction length as a function of energy. This will be the whole diameter, and these are different angles. And you can see about 10 to the 4th and the 5, the Earth becomes opaque to the neutrinos, so you have to look at different angles. And this is just the muon neutrinos. Okay, so what are the sources? We have talked about this already this week. Cosmogenic neutrinos, or GZK neutrinos. These interactions of cosmic rays with microwave background radiation, these have uncertainties depending what is the evolution that you assume, as well as what is the primary. If the primary is nuclei, then the number of neutrinos is suppressed. That's something that Angela has done with collaborators. You do get neutrinos, but not as much as with the protons. Even with protons, you have a large uncertainty due to the evolution. Active galactic nuclei, which I will say a few words about in a minute, gamma ray bursts, we heard a lot about this, I will say again something. A Z burst here is in yellow because it's been disappearing. We've seen very interesting Anita light limits already excluding this, so that's why it's in yellow. It's almost gone. It's gone. I was just being nice to Tom while ago. Okay. So these are, again, neutrinos, cosmogenic, as I already said. Neutrinos from active galactic nuclei. Active galactic nuclei, to me, are the most intriguing sources, potential sources of neutrinos. They're certainly the most powerful radiation sources known in the universe. Luminosities are enormous, 10 to the 42 to 10 to the 48 Earths per second. And I will mention all the TV gamma rays that I observed recently. This is my old transparency. There are a lot of them right now observed with different experiments. But these seem to be potentially to originate in the decay of pi zero. If that is so, meaning that it's hadronic origin, then AGNs would also be the most powerful sources of ultra-high energy neutrinos. This, of course, is questionable. There are a lot of uncertainties, but potentially this could be very, very interesting as far as the neutrino source. From gamma ray bursts, I will mention this also, there are two different models, and I will say a few words about that in just a minute. What are the basic processes of neutrino production in extragalactic sources? Basic processes are proton interacting with photon, using charged pions, then decaying, neutrons interacting with photons, producing negative pi minus and so on. So we always get here muon, neutrino, and electron neutrino. At the same time, the same interaction gives us pi zero, so there is, as Halzen pointed out already, a correlation between the neutrino flux and the gamma ray flux if they originate from these kind of hadronic interactions. For astronomical distances with delta m squared from super K, the mixing is maximal between muon and tau neutrinos, so basically half of the muon neutrinos go into tau neutrinos, so you have flux of the muon equal to the flux of the tau neutrinos. In general, I will show when this differs in just a minute. This is in general true. Let me just show you how I was drawn into this field many, many years ago. It happens that one of the Trevor Weeks students from Whipple collaboration was in my class on particle physics, and I somehow was a scary teacher to him, and so he kept telling me what he's doing in research all the time, because I was also on his thesis committee. And he stormed into my office one day and said, "Oh my goodness, we've seen Mercurian 421 TV photons. This is unbelievable. Nobody else has seen it." And I thought that was exciting. And then just a few weeks later, he comes and he said, "We saw 501," and he was even more excited. So I thought this was really exciting field when things are happening. And this is the Whipple data. This is now old. On Mercurian 421, this is what they have seen in the TV range. This was one of the first observations of the TV photons, which are extremely difficult to detect because these photons interact with microwave background radiation and they get absorbed. So at some point, you just cannot see them anymore. And you see that this spectrum matches EGRET detection of the same source, Mercurian 421. EGRET has detected over 40 sources of 40 active galactic nuclei in the MeV, 100 MeV range, but Whipple was the first one to detect in the TV range. As I said earlier, the next one that they detected, and I'm showing you really the history, this really came directly from Trevor, Mercurian 501 was right here. And I asked immediately, question why EGRET has not seen it, and then they showed me this graph. It's the low EGRET sensitivity. So if you assume one of the E squared type of spectrum, EGRET could not have seen it. Here's the Whipple data. And you will see the current status, which is really impressive what has been done.
Can I just add this?
Sure.
I mean, Egret has detected now on 501 at some low significance, but I'm just curious why you're focusing on BLAC objects when flat spectrum quasars are much more powerful, both absolute attendance.
Yeah, I'm coming. Here is my graph of everything. Okay. This is just what historically was, these are the two that they have seen first.
This is still all BLAC objects.
Egret doesn't have official, Egret team never claimed officially of 01.
Yes, they did.
And they don't agree with that.
No, the latest catalog has.
So it's not Egret official source.
I don't think that's correct.
Okay, so you're saying that that Egret has now detected 501? Is that what you're saying?
There are publications by people outside of Egret. They saw some.
Okay, something which was, okay.
Well, there's below what they stand as weak confidence, which is 4 sigma, as strong as 5 sigma.
Okay, so I just, this is the latest thing that I have heard just 2 months ago. This is a summary that I took from different talks on active galactic nuclei in TeV range that have been observed. This is from Orion, different talks by different people that I just collected. So these are the final northern hemisphere, Mercury 421. This is the redshift. This is the power. Please notice, this is very interesting, at least to me. I don't understand. This is the power spectrum of 2.1. As you will see here, power spectrum of the one detected by Hess are different, very different here. So this is the whole list, and I believe historically it was exactly the way it's written up here. This is the Hess new, I have first seen it just a few months ago, from these two active galactic nuclei. Okay, so this is the redshift, this is the power spectrum, and you notice that they're really different, so northern hemisphere and southern hemisphere. But this is really impressive, at least to me it looks really impressive that they can detect these TV photons and see that, it's really, really hard. I think when they were coming down to this redshift, it was already getting problematic, but to go up to 0.13 is really amazing. So this is, as far as I know, this is the current list of the TeV energy range. I'm not talking about Egret, just TeV range from Whipple and Hess.
These are all BLAC objects. There's an important distinction to make with the flat spectrum quasars.
Yes.
Especially in the neutrino production capability.
Do you mean two in the southern hemisphere?
What is that?
I mean two in the southern hemisphere, right? You said one on the label.
Oh, it's just, I can't count.
I added one later.
Counts of two.
Yes, I've seen it.
How many do you have? Is it two? You're not saying anything.
Two
is the base.
I love when you smile. That means lots to come, right?
Okay, so this is just schematically. Of course, nobody really understands. I mean, there are a lot of different models how the gamma rays are produced. But one model is that you have black hole accretion disk of protons accelerated here through Fermi shock acceleration. Very high energies, then they can interact either inside the jet or with ambient photons, produce pions. Pions decay neutral to gammas, charged to producing neutrinos. So that's one possible model, hadronic model. This is very, very schematic, of course. Now, what I saw first time when I started looking at this, this was again years ago, and this is what I was given by my colleague from astronomy department when I asked her, so what is going on? You know, what is the mechanism? She said, this is what it is. It's really a mess. Nobody understands how these things really, how they're powered. There are different classification of active galactic nuclei, you know, ciphered, lasers, quasars, and all this, but nobody really understands what's going on there. So seeing neutrinos from these objects would be really confirmation of the hadronic origin of the gamma rays that are observed in the TV range. So the models that I'm just going to show on my plot for the fluxes, just as representative, really, it's very hard to tell. As I said, there is so much uncertainty. Is AGN Solomon-Secker flux, which has upper bound for AGN core emission from diffuse X-ray background, and so this is just one flux. This will be for quasars, and Mannheim, I'm going to show you Mannheim and his collaborators, 95B flux, which is for the ADN jet emission. So these are the two I can show you how they look. They have different spectrum. But again, there's a lot of uncertainty here, just to give you some idea how the neutrino flux looks from different models. And to really see that these jets do exist, here's active galaxy M87, and you can see the jet coming out of here. This is from the Hubble Space Telescope. They have beautiful pictures of these objects. Cygnus A is also a very nice picture. You can see that the jets coming out of the center. I think I have Cygnus A here. There it is. This is Cygnus A, and you can see the jet going in this direction. These are the lobes, radio lobes. So this is radio plus optical. Okay, I'm sure that experts are in the audience, so I'm not going to go into the details of that. Now, gamma ray bursts, again, we have people here, Peter and Ellie, who have proposed a model here for gamma ray bursts. Initially, there was a fireball model that Baxton Bacall proposed, which is just a simple model of the fireball energy, some fraction of the fireball which is expanding. It's converted by photopion production to the high-energy neutrinos, and the spectrum looks something like this. More recently, and this is very interesting, this actually gives a larger flux, I believe, of neutrinos than the fireball model, is the mechanism in which you have the choked relativistic fireball jets that are unable to punch through the stellar envelope, and these neutrinos appear 10 seconds before the observation of gamma rays that are produced outside the star by collapsing massive star-induced gamma ray bursts. So the neutrino flux for this is right here, and here is a reference, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about this next week. Are we going to hear about this model, gamma ray bursts?
No.
No? Okay, this is a very interesting Okay, this is a very interesting model, and it's if you have any questions, Peter and Ali are here in the audience. Okay. So finally, something which is kind of least likely to produce really neutrinos is topological defects models. These are so-called top-down models where you have some supermassive elementary particles, particle X, which is associated with grand unified theory. That's so these are non-acceleration models which decays and produces neutrinos. These are very uncertain models, of course, and depending what fraction of this gravitational, what fraction of this string network is converted into gravitational radiation or particle production. So if the energy loss of the string network is converted into gravitational radiation fully, then you get one model. This is the one. Brandenburg et al. If it's particle production, then it's Ziegel et al. And they differ very, very much. So depending what you assume for that. Okay, as I said earlier, this oscillation, this is something I want to mention, that we discovered just by accident, that, as I said earlier, pi decays. If you look at the cascade that I showed, the ratio is 1 to 2 to 0. And then propagation towards the Earth, neutrino oscillation will just be 1 to 1 to 1. However, if you start with not the ratio 1 to 2 to 0 at the source, then you have a three-flavor mixing. And the three-flavor mixing looks like this. You again have muon and tau neutrinos the same. However, you're going to have some of the new E's converted into new mu's and new tau's. And this is something you just noticed because GZK neutrino flux the source is not 1 to 2 to 0. There are some more electron neutrinos than the ratio 2 to 1 coming from the neutron decay and so on. This is the angle cycle model.
And these also decay such that nu mu and nu mu bar are also equally mixed?
They do. They're equal. These fluxes are equal. But they gain a piece from the electron neutrinos. Because of the theta 1-2.
Okay, it's both the new mu mixes and new mu bar.
Yes. Yes.
How much is that?
I'll show it to you. It's not big. It's not going to matter for Anita. It's going to matter for Ice Cube. Okay.
What's the impact of K on the case here?
No K.
This is not a question about, it's just like astrophysical.
Right, but what would you make?
Do K ons in the...
You could.
There's a fraction of cans, but they're not enhanced the way they are now. But it's whatever the ratio of K to pi.
Right.
It's a small...
It's not enhanced the way it is in the atmosphere.
But to produce cans, you need much, much higher energy particles, and usually the spectra are steep, so you have much fewer particles producing cans compared to pions.
But you have fewer cans than pions, that is true.
Still there.
Typically, 10 to minus 5.
No, no. Cans are much bigger. It's like charm is 10 to minus 5.
But from astrophysical sources, they're all mixed anyway.
I mean, if you have, it depends on, okay, so it depends on what the target is. If it's a gas target, you have K-on production.
No, I'm talking about photon target.
Oh, okay.
Even the center of mass energy is small.
You're right.
Yeah, if it's, all right, sorry, I apologize.
Delta energy.
But if it's PP, then you should have it.
If it's PP, then you could have K-on.
Okay, so it's P gamma interaction, so, okay. All right, so I will show you how big this effect is in just a little bit later. Let me just show you these fluxes just to get some feeling why we want to look at high energy above, as I said, 10 to the 6. This is atmospheric here. This is my old slide, but this is just an illustration. Above 10 to the 6, you're going to be able to overcome the background. So these are different. This is different AGN model. This is the one Salomon Secker, which is much flatter than the Mannheim et al. And the gamma ray bursts, it's just one of the gamma ray bursts. But what I want to point out here is above 10 to the 6, you eliminate the background. So that's why we want to concentrate in this region here. This is the uncertainty in topological defect that I mentioned earlier. I also said the cosmogenic neutrinos have uncertainty, and this is to show you how much uncertainty this is angle et al. Is depending on the standard of strong evolution. I think one is exponent 2 and 1. 1 plus z squared, 1 is 4. Is that right, Tom? Something like that. 1 plus z to some power. So the power, I believe, is 1 is 2 and 1 is 4. How you evolve it is a redshift. So this is about a factor of 4. So uncertainty in cosmogenic or GZK. And this is assuming proton is a primary. So I'm not going to talk about Angela's work on nuclei, which gives much less than this.
The source density, is that what you're talking about evolving? I wasn't sure clear what you were evolving.
Yeah. Right. That's angle at all. I have not done that. Angle, Stanov, and these people have done this for the point. Okay. So this is the one that, so this is now what I want to look at is the initial, okay, so here is your question, Steve. About first to see the difference. This is at the source. So this is before propagating the astrophysical distance and before propagating to the Earth. So this is the GZK muon neutrino, the black one. The electron neutrino is right here. You see it's this ratio here is enhanced due to the neutrino. So it's gonna give some difference in this region, but it's not gonna affect about 10 to the 8. And this was just for fun, a Z-burst because of the power law and one of the AGN fluxes here, which of course is much bigger at the lower energy. So this is the plot.
Isn't this already ruled out by the observation?
Which one?
The AGN.
AGN? This one? I don't think so.
It doesn't look like it. It's this is Z-squared the flux, right?
Yeah, Z-squared. Right.
So it's flat, so it's about like 10 times or more higher than the GZK flux.
But it's low energy.
The lower energies, the Amanda limit is already quite close to that.
I don't think this is ruled out. If we can convert these units.
Where's the Watson-McCown?
I don't know. I would have to convert, and I'm not as good as Ellie with these numbers, like the 11 conditions.
This is the
5
by
3
times
10
to the 7.
We have to need it.
You see, this is per kilometer squared per year in GV. So it's
3 times 10 to
the
7.
You got to do that quick, Tyler. This is higher than GZK at 10 to minus 9 in our units.
It's close. It's close. I don't know if it's ruled out or just the border of being ruled out next month or so.
Okay, we'll keep this for today.
Okay, so we have to move it down.
Yesterday, in the context of unequal detection, the tumors were scrambled. There should be no, but you see in your blood, you have maximum causes. When you do E squared, potential floods, but you see the maximum is you have a lot of the tumors.
This is not excluded by NEPA yet. This is Zebra's, yes, but this one is not.
You're saying a lot of neutrinos are lower energy than.
I'm saying to you, well, just in case of neutrinos, there are a lot of neutrinos, or very high neutrinos here.
Yes.
Yesterday, Tim Francis was saying that you should go to lower energies, but you see, of course, you should divide it for.
This is E squared.
To E, but then you have to take into account the collection area just increasing so far, so I think the rate. Detection rate by ANITA, the maximum of the rate will be well above 10 KT.
Actually, right. Yeah, but ANITA can see more events, yeah, than Ice Cube from GZK.
No, yes, there was another question. My friends said that it is better to lower threshold ANITA to get GZK cutoff. But yeah. Now, if you, okay, let's divide by E, yes. Then you have E minus one type spectrum. Integral spectrum for neutrinos, and then if you multiply that to the energy collection area, which was the fast function and quickly increases with energy, you'll see that the rate, detection rate, which is the effective energy threshold, will the peak, I think, well above the anything. So you don't need to increase ANITA to detect GZK cutoff. You don't need to decrease the energy threshold.
No,
that's my comment.
You cannot need or you should decrease the threat. No, we're clear, we can see that.
You can see easily. For you, it's, I think, 10 to 18, 10 to 19, the best region. As I could understand.
Well, the new E curve is more relevant, though, right?
No.
You see neutral currents, you know, viewers.
Oh, they.
Yeah, the neutral current has turned out to be more important because the new E are suppressed by LP and
LPMI. Well, I'll show results for the showers. Which is what they're looking for.
So those curves for the GZK neutrinos are after oscillations?
No. This is the source.
It's the source.
Yeah. This is the source.
And the bump at low energy from new E again is from neutrinos.
Which indicate.
Which gets big when other stuff.
Okay, so, but what is important is, again, to remember that detection is either charged tracks or hadronic electromagnetic showers, so I'm going to look at how to get what would be first propagation of neutrinos, first oscillations at the distances for GZK, as I said, it's a little bit different, and then propagation for the Earth, so we'll have to do that, and then we'll still have to convert it to electromagnetic and hadronic showers and propagate those as well. And you will see that the tau neutrinos will give different contribution from mu mu due to the very short tau lifetime, which is called regeneration effect, but we'll see where this actually turns on and where this is not important anymore, and that's something which was kind of surprising for us when we discovered it, but I'll show you the results. Okay, so briefly, experiments. I put these colors kind of intentionally. So these in black are successful operational experiments, Amanda Rice and Itapia Roger. Ice Cube is planned, Yusun Owl. I will say a few words about SALSA and LOFAR, Antares and Nestor in preparation. I think that will take some time. I'm not sure how much advantage is that going to be over Amanda. Of course, one should think about these extension Ice Cube Plus and Hypercube. That would be very nice if Ice Cube is successful, which I think it will be. Then one can think about this. ANITA, I'm very impressed with what they have done in such a short time. But these are all the experiments.
You're putting Antares lighter than SALSA?
I actually, you know what, I like this experiment. I think it's actually, I talked to David Salzberg and what he's telling me, things are moving. You're part of it, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm just impressed that you're putting it as a darker.
It's personal. Okay.
You take into account politics.
That's everything. Yeah, these are Greeks and French.
I mean, we haven't put our first real hole in.
Dr. Denuso and Howard.
All right. Let me put it this way. I would visit these two places rather than these two. Okay.
How should we visit?
What, Amanda?
Antares.
Antares, yes.
And also in the rest of the
almost invisible.
Well, you don't know. You don't know. Okay, okay. So we all, I have plenty of stuff that we all know about. Actually, this is, again, since you mentioned yesterday's talk, I do have their plot, Anita plot. This is maybe what you just mentioned about the threshold stuff. Okay, so this is the GZK here. Now this is the, so I think this is Anita here, right? So what I think what Francis was maybe saying, that the sense is saying just to decrease or maybe improve this part, because you're not very sensitive to
the whole point Francis was making is if we can lower the threshold, we'll get a few more events, like two or three factors of two or three more events.
Sure.
It's very knowing that we're in this place.
Yeah, I mean, we're already big enough to see it. I mean, you'd have to change those spectra to very low energies for us to miss it.
Yeah.
You still are cutting roughly half the
flux,
so you can double it by...
That's what I'm saying. Even the very lowest lines on there, we can get at least 5 to 10
of them. Okay. This is what was shown in Marion, and I blurted to David Salzberg that I saw this because I was very excited, and he said, what? I'll tell them to remove it. So they removed it, but I copied it before they removed it. This is Anita Life, the stuff that Steve showed yesterday. This is very impressive limits. Of a Nicolai.
That's
no, there is a Nicolai. There is a Nicolai here.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I think it's very impressive.
It looks even better.
It's a very impressive limit. You have to detect once neutrinos. And after that, limit will be impressive. Because, you know, that happened in gamma ray astronomy. Gamma ray instruments were putting very impressive limits, but it appeared that they were not so effective as supposed to be. So I think it's really impressive, but it's important for at least one detection. After that would be that you are convinced that the detector.
Of course, but I think that the fact that they got this to work in such a short time, and the next, you know, it's going to be a year and a half or something like that, they're going to go down, they're going to probe this. Okay, everybody knows about OWL, which I don't know what is the current status, I guess. It was up and down.
It's never been up.
I don't think it's been up yet.
not up there, but I mean up on the list for NASA. But anyway, this is the two satellites that would be looking down, and they would be very sensitive to the high, very, very high energy neutrinos. USA is similar, just a smaller in size. Okay, so everybody knows about these experiments. Auger, I'm looking forward to see the results in the summer. I think that's going to be really nice. And
we'll
some
trigger results in the summer.
No?
Well, we can put a limit.
That's a mission.
We not have any neutrino.
Okay, so Salsa and Lothar, of course.
This is the first thing we heard about Auger results.
Okay, I'm not even half through, but remember that Tom and Francis finished early, so I can take their time. All right, so this is Salsa, the rock salt formation, which I was told somewhere, Steve, is it in New Mexico or Texas, somewhere there are salts? In Texas, okay. So I think this is a very interesting idea because salt has a higher density, so you can achieve an effective detection volume, which is several hundred kilometer cube water column in salt. So this would have a roughly threshold 10 to 7 GV, so which is nice, relatively low. A LOFAR is a digital telescope array designed to detect regular Cherenkov emission and air showers. Again, the threshold is what I'm emphasizing here is 10 to the 5. So this will be really, really nice. Okay, now, as I said earlier, we have to look at the propagation of the neutrinos and use the Earth to enhance the volume of the detector, or for Ice Cube and Anita, just look at the propagation through the ice, because they're looking at the Cherenkov radiation in the ice. So as muon neutrinos propagate, they just produce muons, and muons get absorbed if they travel quite a distance. But the tau neutrinos interact with these taus, and taus decay back to new taus. So you would say new taus would really enhance the signal quite a bit relative to the muon neutrinos, but you'll see what is going to happen at higher energies. This, again, is the picture of that. So you would basically just degrade in energy, and you would eventually end up with the low energy tau neutrinos in the detector, and these would be lost. But actually, that's not what happens. I will show you what happens with this tau. It will actually lose the energy and not decay. And above some energy, this will have no effect whatsoever. Okay, so what do we need to do to get the neutrino flux first and then to get showers? We need to look at the propagation. We have done this in steps, actually, and finally completed putting all the processes in. So for muon neutrinos, it's very simple. You're looking at the muon neutrinos. This is the gain for the neutrinos from the from neutral current. This one is neutral current gain, charge current loss. And this term would not exist for the muon neutrinos, but it exists for the tau, because the tau is produced in the charge current decay back, so they feed back to the new tau. And then you have a couple of equations for the taus, which you do not have for muons, where tau flux, again, is generated through the charge current new tau, but decay eliminates. So you have to solve these couple of equations. You have to be very careful. Initially, we did not look at the tau energy loss, but this is something that's very important at high energies. At high energies, you have to take into account tau energy loss carefully. There is the photonuclear part here, which is quite big.
I didn't understand the first equation. The new tau in the neutral current isn't producing a tau. It's only the charge current.
Which one?
The first equation.
This one?
Yeah, I didn't understand your explanation. Well, the third term.
Here? Neutral current.
The green one. The green.
It just
the
green, lower.
The green. Shouldn't that be in the charge current equation?
No, this is the neutrino, tau neutrino from tau decay,
but
the feedback.
There's no tau decay in a neutral current interaction.
Why neutral? Why are we talking about neutral current?
Well, I thought that's what you said.
No, this is neutral current.
Uh-huh.
This is total, and this is tau decay. Tau decay will feed back to this. So you calculate this flux, you feed it back here.
Okay, I see.
It's all coupled. Full coupled. Okay, I won't go into the energy loss, which is really complicated calculation. I'm going to skip things. This is kind of useful to remember these cross-sections. These are all standard model cross-section of charge current. They're nicely parameterized, so you can use this if you don't want to take the data for different components. I do want to mention something, and I'm not going to talk a lot about it, and that is that there is some uncertainty in even the standard model cross-sections, and that is at small x Parton distributions, because we are at very high energies, we're at very small x, large Q squared, there is no measured distributions there. So what are we doing? We're extrapolating standard Dirichlet evolution there. However, we know that at small x and large Q squared, we have to take into account evolution in the log alpha s log of 1 over x as well. This is so-called BFKL. So one should really do unified BFL Dirichlet evolution equations, include saturation effect, the nonlinear terms. So all of this needs to be done. So there is some uncertainty here at higher energies, and I will show you on the graph what this is. Okay, so this is just to show you how much uncertainty there is. Don't look at these signals at the moment. So this black one is the standard Dirichlet extrapolation at low x, and this green one is the one with saturation and unified BFKL Dirichlet. So you do get about, well, I don't know, depending on the energy, but here it's about a factor of 3 or so at high energy. So there is some uncertainty in the cross-section. It starts about 10 to the 8 or so. I will talk about this new physics later on. Okay, so here is we're looking now at solving this propagation. First, we're looking at the charge leptons and neutrino fluxes as they propagate. Then we're going to create showers. So first we propagate them. So this is the 85 degree angle. And look at the tau. Let's see, this is a muon. No energy loss is the blue one. The green one is the the energy loss, it's an enormous energy loss for all this energy range. And tau, again, it's very important, this is no energy loss, and this is energy loss. And that's something which was not done before, and you will see this will play a significant effect as far as when tau decays at this energy. So this is how much it is.
This is on Earth, right?
This is
right. How well do you know about the tau energy loss, this alpha and beta and the energy loss equation?
We actually calculated all those. Alpha is known very well. Beta photonuclear is not known that well, and we took into account uncertainty. And uncertainty is really in this range where you really are losing so much. You know, here is so many orders of magnitude that uncertainty doesn't matter that much. There is uncertainty in photonuclear energy loss, yes. Okay. So now let's look at the neutrinos as they propagate again 85 degrees. These are GZK neutrinos. And here is, answer to your question, C, here is the electron neutrinos are right here, the green one, and the muon neutrinos are the red one. So that's how much they differ. So below 10 to the 8, they do not differ. But for Ice Cube, this region, they are different. So that will play some role. These are secondary. If you're producing a tau, and then you're looking at the neutrinos from that, like a secondary neutrino, this is the their contribution, so it's really, you can ignore it. There was a paper by Beacom and Schramm, and no, Beacom and Kolb and their student, and they took a monogenic initial flux and concluded secondaries were important. If you take GZK, they're really not important. So that was just an artifact of the flux that they have taken. So this is the contribution. So you can ignore it. How important are energy losses for the neutrinos? I'm still just doing neutrinos and I'm not doing showers yet.
Can you go back to that previous?
Yes.
So actually, at high energies where we don't expect it. Never mind. Because those electron and muon neutrinos you heard with the degraded energy also, right? So you really can't tell them from the initial ones and they're down by a couple of those magnitudes.
Yeah. Okay, so here is the, just to see how much, and this is the part which, okay, so this would be tau neutrinos without energy loss of the tau, so this red line. And this is, the black one is with the tau loss, energy loss. So you see how much you're not getting this huge enhancement due to regeneration because of the tau energy loss. And this was the exponential attenuation showing you that you really have to solve the equations rather than just do exponential attenuation on your tau. That's how much it differs. So the tau energy loss significantly suppresses the regeneration due to the new tau decay effect. This is to show you what happens at different angles. Of course, the more material you have, the more enhanced.
Sorry, what do you mean by suppress? You mean that the flux is reduced or that the energy is?
Regeneration, which means new tau to tau,
right,
decaying back.
You're still getting the same number of neutrinos coming out, effectively modulo these extra electron muon neutrinos. The energy is all degraded.
No, no. What happens is that tau becomes like muon at very high energy. They lose so much energy, they just don't make it. So above some energy, they look the same as muons, and that's something that was...
But Doug is still correct.
What?
They decay eventually.
Yeah, eventually they'll decay.
They decay. Much lower energy neutrinos, but they decay.
Yeah,
the neutrino is there, but it's much lower energy.
They do not give this regeneration effect that the low energy. In other words, if you look at the decay length, it gets, effective decay length gets modified due to the energy loss.
Well, what happens to those taus?
They decay.
They must decay.
Yeah, that's right. They're not there.
They lost all their energy? And then
yeah.
Yeah.
They stop them.
They produce a very low energy neutrino.
Okay, which
will
never be detectable.
It will not be detectable.
I
can I go back to slides when you said there was a difference between mu and mu?
That I knew.
If you're not even worried
was that about. Because of your input spectrum? No.
Because of the three-flavor oscillation. Because initially, electron neutrinos and muon neutrinos were not 2-to-1. They take into account neutron decay. So initially, you start with a different ratio. If you start with a different ratio, pick up the mixing between electron neutrino and muon and tau.
And what's that fraction on Earth after you propagate them?
That's this part. Let's see, where did I...
It's the previous one, so that's
okay,
the...
Hold on.
So you started with a GZK typical circle type, whatever.
Angle, circle, and standard, yes.
So, yes, and then you get a tiny bit left over of that bump from the neutron decay.
Yeah, that's
not
this.
As much.
Yeah.
Okay. And the tau is okay.
Yeah.
So they're pretty close.
Yeah, it's not a big effect.
Right.
But, you know, we were kind of surprised, you know, nobody noticed that actually you do get some mixing because they don't start with 1:2:0 ratio. Yeah.
It's not 1:1:1.
Right, it's not.
But the tau is even bigger than the new, right? So you get more new taus.
Oh, but this is regeneration.
Ah.
This difference between red and black is regeneration.
I'm just thinking, before you get into the Earth, what from the astrophysical source?
Yes.
What do you get before you cross the Earth?
That was my initial one. Let's see what I
can
find.
That, because the reason I'm interrupting is because if you have a mixed composition, that little bump there becomes a humongous thing.
Okay, well,
the neutron bump. So knowing what type of tau you have. But if it's too much trouble, just out there. Finish the talk and I'll come back to ask you. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Okay.
How far along are you, Lena?
I'm not very far.
So
I'll just go. You stop me when you want. You know, I thought I would explain. So you know, there's a lot of stuff. But you know, when it's 12, if you want, I'll just stop. I mean, okay. So all right. So now we have to look at the showers. So we have to look at the electromagnetic showers and hadronic showers. Electromagnetic from tau decay, this is going to be additional contribution. This is because taus are produced within through the oscillations, and this is what you would expect with the new E-charge current. And then hadronic showers would get contribution from tau decay, and this would be what you would expect from the other ones. So this electromagnetic showers will feel regeneration more than the hadronic showers, because this relative to that is more than this relative to all of this. So they'll both feel this regeneration, but the electromagnetic will have higher enhancement than hadronic. So what you need to do is this, to take into account electromagnetic showers from tau decays, you look at the taus and then you decay them, and you have to take into account double bank, which are the taus are produced inside the detector and they decay inside, so it's a double bank. There is also so-called lollipop events, which are the taus that produce outside but decays inside the detector. And electromagnetic showers for new interactions up in this way. So this is how we got the showers, electromagnetic ones. And I'm going to show you, this is for 85 degrees again. Now we're looking not neutrinos, now we're in showers, which is what these experiments detect. This is new E interaction, is the major contribution, but then you see here is from the tau decay is the black line, so this contribution here is sizable. Double bang and lollipop are the contribution, but double bang is small. However, if you can identify the double bang, they're very clean signal. They're much smaller contribution, but they're very clean signal. Secondary are negligible.
Should we see the flash out amendments? Oh, there's a new E, sorry.
Yes. Okay, so let's look at the ratios. You can see how big this is for electromagnetic showers. So taking into account the taus, in other words, oscillations, this is the enhancement we get for GZK here. Notice it's peaked at around 10 to the 7 or so. And for 1 over E, for example, so it depends very much on your initial flux. If you have a different shape than GZK, which is falling at high energy, 1 over E, then you would get enhancement, which is larger at lower energy. So it's dependent on your initial flux.
Isn't that one under the atmospheric?
Yeah, still about 10 to the 6.
When does atmospheric start killing?
Well, we know that.
Yeah, this
is
where.
It's huge,
yeah.
10 TeV.
Well, not for the GZK flux.
Oh, no, of course not for the GZK.
No, but. If you're talking at these low fluxes, Yes, that's what I'm saying. Keep going.
Below, at least order of magnitude below this, so that's the... Okay, so this shows, again, the dependence on the shape. So the flatter the spectrum, which is something you expect, the more enhancement you're going to get. So this is 1 over E squared, flux is this, is tau and mu E, and this is 1 over E. So the more, that's something you know. The flatter the spectrum, the more effect you're going to get. Okay, I'm going to skip some of these so we can get, okay, this is the dependence on the angle. This is for the AGN flux, for the kilometer size detector. And so for 85 degrees, this would be the new E's, this would be the tau. And for 89 degrees, of course, you would get this green line for the tau, and new E would be much higher. So the more material you're going to cross, the more contribution relative to regeneration you're going to get relative to no regeneration. But your flux goes down because there is absorption. So the more material, the more regeneration, but the flux goes down because there is absorption on the way. So you have to pay the price for that. And this is for Anita, electromagnetic showers. So you're looking at, for 89 degrees, you're looking at 200 kilometers of ice. So this is propagation through the ice, getting electromagnetic showers in the ice. This would be for GZK flux, this is the tau. This is mu E for GZK, contribution from tau, contribution from mu E. This is for 1 over E flux, tau, and mu E. So this is the relative contribution of those. I think I better show you the ratio of those as well. Hadronic showers, again, from the tau decay. That's contribution additional from the new tau neutrinos. Again, you go through the lollipop events in ice cube and electromagnetic showers in rice. So these are the tau produced in the cave hydronically inside the detectors. These are so-called double bang events, all like this. And this is what you would expect just from the standard mu E, mu mu charge current direction to produce these showers. So this is additional contribution due to the new taus produced in the oscillations. And I'm just going to show you, I think, the ratio because we're running out of time. I'm going to show you how much enhancement you get. Here it is. For hadronic showers due to this new tau neutrinos. So hadronic showers, as I said, is not as much as electromagnetic. For this is if you can identify muon tracks and you subtract them, so that would be ice cube, then this would be enhancement in hadronic showers. So if you exclude the charge current when you see tracks, you exclude these events, this is the enhancement. Put everything together, you can get as much as 50% at about 10 to the 7 GeV. So this will be the ratio. Okay, now I have hadronic showers for, well, let me just show you this. This is probably the one that's the best. All right, so this is now electromagnetic. So this is due to the new tau together plotted with hadronic, so this is electromagnetic GZK, is the red one. So this is the enhancement due to the tau neutrinos, due to the oscillation. For hadronic, is right here, for GZK. For 1 over E, this would be electromagnetic, and this is hadronic. So it depends very much on the shape of the flux. And it peaks, you know, whatever the shape of the flux is, the peak is going to get shifted to the right if you have peak of that distribution, the high energy. So, and the width depends also on the shape of the initial flux. So this is for Anita, the enhancement at high energy. Okay. Now, I'm going to spend the last 2 minutes on just telling you how this is also very important for studying new physics. Now, we are at the energies which are above LHC, so we are really probing new physics. Whatever you can see at LHC, you may see. If you have enough flux of neutrinos, you may see it in these interactions. So this gives you an idea that 10 to the 17 eV neutrino beam corresponds to 14 TeV center of mass energy. So that is a very small X region as well. And what are the things that you're looking for? Well, all these detection depend on the cross-section. All the detection of course, you have to take into account propagation, but if you have some enhancement in the cross-section, your rate, downward rate, depends on the cross-section. So if you have a much larger cross-section, your rate is going to be much higher. For upward, of course, you're not going to, if you have much larger cross-section, if some new physics comes into play, you're going to have suppression here. This is just schematically suppression or attenuation, so large that you're not going to see anything. So you have to look at mostly downward, and that's what Steve was talking about, that they found this nice way of looking at reflected events, and that would correspond to these downward events. And what are the new physics? Let me just list it quickly. So these are the new things that one can have. There's a bunch of stuff. One can look for the electroweak instantaneous induced processes, for microscopic black holes, exchange of Kaluza-Klein gravitons, and something that we have looked at this as well, but something that we have done recently is to look how one can probe low-scale supersymmetry with neutrinos. This is producing an UI energies which are above the scale to trigger supersymmetry, so you produce charged leptons in neutrino interactions, and you say, well, this is small, this is supersymmetry, you know, this cross-section is tiny. It is, it's extremely small, it's two orders of magnitude smaller than standard model. But stars, which are next to lightest particles, travel the whole distance of the Earth. So you compensate for the cross-section with the range of the star to the whole Earth. So you get some events from this as well. So you can probe low-scale supersymmetry, you can probe these things as well. So I'm just going to show you how this cross-section, again, something that Steve mentioned yesterday. This is the electroweak instanton cross-section that triggers about 10 to the 9. So this is where Anita would be very sensitive to. They could certainly see something, as Steve was pointing out yesterday, that's enhanced that much, several orders of magnitude. This would be black hole production in these microscopic black hole production. And again, you get enhancement. Again, Anita is sensitive to this, so you can put, there are already some limits coming from the fly's eye and other experiments, but one can look for the enhancement in the cross-section.
So the instanton cross-section is the production of Ringwald?
I'm sorry? This is Ringwald, yes. This is Ringwald, yes.
There's a paper by Sapochnikov, no?
Yes. It's another talk.
But
yes.
You know how it moves?
Yes, it moves to high energies, yes. Mm-hmm. It moves to 10 to the 10. The order of magnitude. So if that is true, you won't see it. Yes, that is certainly the case. The same thing with the black holes. Of course, if the scale is higher, you know, the number of dimensions is higher, this gets moved to the high energy, and you can't see it. So these are.
I would be very surprised if the red is not completely ruled out by a gas that red.
This one.
Yeah. With the GCK, obviously you could say there's no GCK neutrinos, but. Because that's orders of magnitude. I mean, at Auger we would measure at the standard model cross section, right?
Yeah.
So they are smaller, but they, you know, five orders of magnitude, six, it's gone. Unless there's a GCK neutrino.
At some point, you start looking like protons.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we put limits that are close to the blue line.
So I think that the proposal of Ringwald was that about the GCK, the events were due to these neutrinos. Interacting through.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Tend to be fine. Gets a very close.
And they look at running because it's affected.
Yeah. So I think there are limits on the group. Unless they are hadronic, then we would call them protons. But
right.
Sort of a
impossible.
They interact at high in the atmosphere.
Well, if they're not protons, they are not showing up as neutrinos. That dark flux. I mean, we would see. The blue, the green, and the black eventually at Auger, right? A gas that would see something like the blue. We put, you know, TV limits on it on our paper way back then with the data from the gas. Otherwise, they would have seen, you know, many more changes. Of course, you always have the, if there is a GCK flux, there's always that error, right? If it's zero, then you could play whatever you want. But.
And the cross section that big, these are all interacting in the atmosphere anyway, and I think our gas is.
Yeah. They're ruled. I think they're either ruled out or they look exactly like a proton, then we can't tell. That's why it looks like a step function.
That's right.
What do you mean if there is no GCK?
What I mean is, to put a limit on the cross-section, you need to know the flux.
Right.
So if we assume the GZK flux, then you can limit the cross-section. But suppose the GZK flux is zero for some crazy reason that, you know, for example, it's not zero, but...
But it's not.
Well, I can't see any other reason except for putting ion sources in the galaxy to explain the high energy events. Right, but... But I've suggested that too, so I guess I can't say it's not impossible, but it is very hard.
So if you're saying if it's nuclei, neutrino flux is too low, and then...
No, but even then, it's just an order of magnitude, so...
What is your comment that if they look like protons? I mean, the whole point is that they wouldn't look like protons.
What I'm saying is that the red line is a model that tries to bring the cross-section from zero to proton level very fast, because anything in between would be ruled out with the GZK flux. Right. I mean, the only thing we can't rule out is that there are some protons that happen to be neutrinos that look like protons because they're measuring protons. But anything that looks like a neutrino, if there's a GZK flux, they can't be there.
But it would produce a feature in the spectrum.
But if it, it looks like a proton. That's because of the cross section. It just looks like a proton to them.
Yes, a small fraction of a proton.
According to that, over one factor of two in energy, the cross section goes up.
A factor of four or five more.
And I don't mean in the steep part, even in the flat part. Mm-hmm. And so you would see that that's not proton-like. But anyway, it's an idle comment.
I think that's perfectly sensible comment, because unless it turns on absolutely square, you would see some sort of long line things and the angular distribution would be quite good.
Right, that's right.
Well, it depends on the percentage, right? I mean, suppose you put a tiny amount of, spend the time on this anyway.
It's fair that one can tune the spectrum.
Peter, they took my time. I'm going to take it back. Okay, I'll start.
Well, you talked about how we should be able to generate.
That was
nice.
What kind of show will be generated in the interaction of EW in Istanbul?
That's what Angela is saying. It's a look. It's a look hadronic. Yes. Yes.
Well, in that case, it's a very high multiplicity show.
Yes, that's
much
right.
much higher multiplicity. I mean,
yes, that's right.
Factors of hundreds higher multiplicity.
It's hundreds W's, for example, and things like
that. But that's hard to tell. It's like the black hole.
Very high. Very high. Fixed mass.
But very tough to tell.
How realistic are these calculations for this? We are discussing something which could be very fishy.
The whole high energy community is talking about the black hole and LHC. No, well, in extra dimension.
Come on, Felix, relax. I know you're an astronomer now, but you used to be one of us way back then.
No, we're putting so much money into LHC, which will turn on in a couple of years. And they're going to be looking for supersymmetry, extra dimensions, things like that. And what I'm saying is you can do all of that in neutrinos for free, as long as you get enough flux. And so you're saying how reliable this is. The assumption is that there is this proposal by Valley, Arkani Hamad, Valley, and Dimopoulos, that we live in the brain, which is four-dimensional, and the gravity propagates in the extra dimensions. So if that is so, once you reach a certain distance, you can create a black hole, and that's under that assumption. So you're creating a black hole at these very high energies. This is a number of extra dimensions, but you have to be above a TV scale. This is the TV scale, and you start feeling these extra dimensions. And there are parameters there, of course, and you can also exchange these Kaluza-Klein states in the interaction. There is uncertainty there. Of course, that whole picture may be wrong. What I'm telling you is that if you take that as one of your possibilities, then you could test it, if you can find a color, right? You can test this as well in the neutrino interactions. That would look like this. And instanton, you certainly have electroweak instanton processes. That's not an issue, but there is uncertainty in the calculation. This is perturbative calculation of Ringwald and... Well, so there was another guy, Ringwald and... Yes. Yes. And then the Russians came and noticed that if you do different type of, more non-perturbative type of calculation, it actually this looks very different. It's suppressed and it's not something here. So there's a large uncertainty due to our lack of calculation of the instant time induced, not that they don't exist, but we don't know exactly how to calculate it precisely. So this is certainly, there is something going on here, but where it turns out and how big it is not clear. With black holes, you know, and the exchange of the Kaluza-Klein states, you have to believe that we live in the extra-dimensional world.
This instanton enhancement, doesn't it also change the cross-section to interaction with electromagnetic, like with photons?
Yeah, it's independent of the thing. It also for quarks.
Hmm?
Also for quarks.
Right. So yeah, so aren't you worried about interaction with the CMB, for example, with this,
which one, the red one?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand. You have to be at very high energies. You have to reach energies with this above TV.
I misunderstood.
So which one are you talking about?
The black hole one is independent of flavor, but the instant time one needs a quark.
Right.
And by the way, just to get it accurate, it was me and Mike Dine and Tom Banks that first showed that this is a wrong calculation.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
That's okay.
Okay, I want to see that. That's all. All right. So, but this is extra dimension. What I also mentioned is another thing is super.
Sorry, quark or interchangeable. I thought something with a few
people I
know.
Okay. I think this is what Angela was mentioning, and I just have a slide of black holes and cosmic rays stuff, and some of the limits in the black holes done by these people in cosmic rays. You can exclude, if no black holes are found in Piaget, then the scale for these extra dimensions is of 2 TeV is excluded for any n, so it's going to really become, you know, not interesting anymore if you have to go to much higher scale. We don't see the Piaget. Okay, and I have plenty of plot, but I'm just going to show you the supersymmetry real quick because it's kind of cute. We're still looking at that, and I actually have new results which we have not even, I haven't shown it anywhere. It was actually done just 2 days ago. Okay, so this is the idea with Albuquerque, Bergman, and Chaco, is that you, in neutrino interactions with nucleons, you produce sleptons, which are next to lightest supersymmetric particle, which can then travel very long distances before decay. But they are going to lose energy, and this is very important as they travel, again, very strong nuclear production, photonuclear. But this type of energy loss is different than taus, because these are sleptons, so they have different type of interactions, extra pieces. So you go and say, as I said earlier, the cross-section is tiny, and Glennis will tell you it's really, really small, and here it is. It is small. This is standard model cross-section, and this is the, depending on the quark mass, this is the supersymmetric cross-section. So you're saying there is no way I can see this. But then you get this enhancement, I mean, you get this huge lifetime. So then you look at the energy loss of the sleptons, and this is the nuclear pair production and the Bremsstrahlung, depending on the mass. And you see that the nuclear is the dominant, a radiative one is a dominant at high energy, and it's energy dependent. And I'm going to just show you what happens now with the spectrum of staus, because they reach the detector. And this is what Yvonne just, we gave her, so we now, we joined forces because we calculated the energy losses of the staus. We joined the forces with Yvonne and Gustavo, and here is what Yvonne sent me just 2 days ago. This is the Stau energy distribution. And this, she said, is probably numerical. She was rushing and taking care of the students and all kinds of stuff. So this is just numerical. It's not really that big. But depending on the quark mass, this is the energy distribution of the Staus. And you see it's peaked at about 10 to the 6. And then it goes down. And this is very different than if you assume that you have a constant energy loss of the Stau. So the question is now, how many events would Ice Cube see? Because Ice Cube is going to see tracks of these cells, the charged particles. And Yvonne is telling me that's of order 10, but this is, again, something that we have not finished. And then something that we are thinking about right now is how to do this for Anita. Anita has larger volume, but they don't detect charged particles. They can look at the tau decaying in gravitino and tau decaying hadronically. They see showers. Whether this decay part and the fact that you have to do it in that layer of ice can, which reduces the probability just of the charge tracks coming through, would be compensated by the large size of the detector. We think it will, so they and it may potentially be able to see even more events coming from these. This, of course, would be upward. There's nothing else for ETA coming up. Nothing can make it with these energies coming through. This would be coming through the Earth and giving showers. And so it would be a really clean signal. So that's the...
What's the neutrino being here? Is it JZK neutrino still?
Yes. And now I don't know which one she took. Whether it was, yes, it is. But I don't know which one she took, whether she took the standard or the other one.
So they're produced by neutrino interactions?
Produced by neutrino interactions.
On the other side of the
Earth? On the other side of the Earth. Then they, otherwise, if they produce in a detector, such a small cross-section one thing.
Yeah.
And then they travel through the whole Earth. And for ice cube, they just look like charged tracks separated by some distance and coming from below. For ETA, we would have to decay them. They decay into gravitino and tau, and then tau hadronically, and then look at the hadronic showers.
How does the tau track radiate compared to muon or a tau?
Looks the same.
Like mechanical.
But it's a lot heavier, so it's going to produce a lot less light.
That I don't know. And you can ask, if, is that...
It's heavy, but...
Might not be visible.
In any case, the relative distance. So,
can you tell them?
Okay. So I'm just going to conclude. It's just too much. You see, I saw Tom and Francis running out of research. I put too many. Okay. So here's my summary.
I started at the end and go backwards.
I know. Okay. All right. So, all right. So what is the conclusion? First of all, tau neutrinos do, if neutrinos are producing these astrophysical sources, because of oscillation, we are going to get tau neutrinos coming to the Earth. Above 10 to the 8 GeV, tau energy loss is important, cannot be ignored. Above 10 to the 8, tau neutrino flux resembles muon flux due to the tau energy loss, so you don't see much difference. Below, however, below 10 to the 8, the regeneration of the new tau becomes important, while the muon neutrinos are attenuated. This regeneration effect depends strongly on the shape of the initial flux, and it's larger for flutter fluxes. Also, enhancements due to regeneration depends on the amount of material that traversed, both for neutrinos and for leptons, basically of the angle. And we certainly believe that neutrinos can provide a new window to the universe. They can travel larger distances. High energy neutrinos can travel larger distances than the high energy photons that get absorbed. They can probe particle physics, astrophysics, and cosmology, new energy and density regimes. And the high energy neutrino telescopes may reveal existence of interaction induced by standard model electroweakincent tones, physics beyond the standard model, low scale supersymmetry, TV gravity, extra dimensions. And I think this is really a list of experiments that's going to bring us, I think, big discoveries in the next few years. IceCube, Bryce, Anita, Al, Yusso, Ager, Salsa, and Alpha. So I'll finish with that.
Okay, well, I guess if we have questions, private, we'll go ahead.
One thing I realized when I started working on ANITA is not only is these cross sections of interest, you know, those look for standard model or beyond, you also have to sort of tell us what fraction of energy goes into the high energy leptons versus the showers.
Yes.
Because, with, for example, micro black holes, a lot more energy just gets dumped into the pion.
Yes.
And relative to standard model.
Yes.
So that makes a big difference experimentally on what fraction of these things we can detect. So if you're going to start looking at models beyond standard, we have to not only know the cross-section, but also what, at least a rough idea of what fraction of energy gets deposited in a high-energy lepton versus,
mm-hmm.
tracks.
Yeah, I think there is a rough estimate of those. Example for the instanton processes, rough estimate how many multiplicities. And multiplicity, hadronic multiplicities is what you would want, right? And the fraction of energy carried by those, just roughly estimate for those.
Or which is which fraction of energy gets carried off in visible stuff versus, you know, neutrinos or, mm-hmm. or other supersymmetric particles.
Yeah, I think that can be done.
Well, the black hole one we did, right, the shower simulations, and the answer is you can't tell them apart. Because if you had, at least in the atmospheric case, you see the maximum of the shower, and you don't know where the first interaction was. If you were able to see the first interaction and the maximum, then you could tell the difference, because one develops much faster than the other. But if you're looking at the peak, they look very similar. And since for protons, we know where the interaction first point is, but for a neutrino, it could interact anywhere. So if you knew where the first interaction and the maximum were, you could tell the difference between a black hole and a normal standard model case. But if you don't know where it interacted, you only see the tip of the iceberg, you don't know how big the iceberg is underneath. So it's very tough. If it has normal interactions, unless you hide, you know, 90% of it. But the difference between black hole and standard model is usually the multiplicity is very high, so you jump a bunch of the first steps on your shower, so you have a much faster, but the peak looks the same, so it's very hard to tell.
Yeah, I think the flux of GZK neutrino depends on very much the, how much do you integrate the neutrino toward the past Z-max. To have the past of universe.
Mm-hmm. And E-max too.
Yeah, huh?
And E-max.
E-max too. Yes, E-max too. Is there some common sense recently about these values, Z-max and E-max?
Nope.
No.
It's up to nature.
You can change the order of magnitude easily.
Well, yeah. Only if you have very fast evolution, it depends on the Z-max. If you have a star formation rate evolution, for example, it doesn't change much as you go to higher redshifts because
so the it's basically Z-max is a 1 or 2.
That's right. Effectively.
Right.
Even if you integrate to infinity, you don't get much more because the age of the universe shrinks as you go to higher redshift. So unless the generation rate increases much faster than the age decreases, you don't change much.
So for astrophysical sources,
for astrophysical sources.
Both star formation and AGN. Both peak at about Z of 2 or 3.
Anyway, you know, almost brothers. The yeah. Night sky is dark.
And Emax will only increase your flux from most calculations. And let's keep going, right? To higher Emax. And the lower Emaxes are usually used with, you know, what we know exists, right? So it's an increase in the flux, but the composition can lower it, which is the other variable. But that's an order of magnitude if it's actually collected at most.
Okay, time for lunch. Thanks.